Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Puff Puff Pass, your 420 friendly movie review podcast. My name's Christian.
And my name's Sahara.
And we are the world's worst critics, hosting your critically acclaimed podcast today. Sahara?
Yes.
How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. You want to tell me what this episode is?
Yes. So, as a lot of you can probably tell by my not high voice, this is another implementation. What's the word? Mm-hmm. This is another addition, whatever, to one of our Sober Thoughts episodes.
Mm-hmm. And if you don't know what Sober Thoughts is, it's basically when we talk about all the movies that we have reviewed, and we're telling you all behind the scenes movie facts about them while completely and utterly sober.
Sober.
Mm-hmm. But this is a very special episode, and this is our third annual Spooktober, where we wear costumes from around the house.
Woo!
Christian.
Yes.
Are you sad that Spooktober's ended?
A little bit. I mean, it is still October as of the time of us recording this, but this will come out in like November, I
believe. It's not going to come out in November. It's going to come out on Halloween.
I thought our episodes come out on Sunday.
Yeah, our regular episodes.
Oh, okay. Well, that's fair. Okay, well, this episode will come out on Thursday the 31st instead of Sunday, November 2nd, like I originally thought. My apologies.
But after that, we're going to go on a little hiatus.
Womp womp.
Yeah, but hopefully we'll see you guys back in December.
We need a break. You guys are exhausting.
No, it's just outside life. It has taken a component where we're just going to have to be like, there's too much going on. There's too much going on.
Too much happening.
But is there a Halloween movie that you wish that we did, that we covered?
I wish we covered Scary Godmother. Yeah. That would have been fun.
Like both movies, like the first and the second one. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. Do you know that the boy Jimmy is voiced by that guy from The Hunger Games, Kato? Really? Did you know that? Mm-hmm.
He looks like Kato.
I don't know if he voices the first movie or the second movie, but I know he does one of the voices of Jimmy.
That's amazing.
I know. Oh my goodness. I love that movie.
Scary Godmother.
Mm-hmm. My favorite was the vampire couple.
Mm-hmm.
Very,
very us coded.
Oh no!
Oh, I'm sorry. Are we a Scary Godmother and Bugaboo then?
Maybe, or her skeleton in the closet.
Mm. I bet you'd like that.
Oh my god! No, I'm Hannah. I'm gonna wear my fairy princess tutu outfit.
Mm-hmm. I bet.
She was so real, honestly. She kind of annoys me once she's already in the Scary Mother's house, like. You're at a witch's house. She has shown you magic. Why is everything in the room scaring you? I've been like, you know what? Okay.
Real.
At some point, you just have to accept what's going on.
Accept it.
Live with it. Let's see. What Halloween movie do I wish that we covered? You know, I was thinking about Beetlejuice. I was like, I feel like we should cover that. And I was thinking about next year. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I was like, it'd be kind of cool to cover. Because you saw the whole thing for like the first time all the way through for the first time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you like it?
It was okay.
Do you see the appeal of why other people like it?
Kind of. But also like,
It's just weird. It's just quirky.
It's meh for me.
Really?
Yeah.
It always makes me question like, man, I wonder if that's how like death works, because you know how like whenever people are investigating like ghosts, and the ghosts are always like just as confused as the fucking person.
So like, what are you doing here?
Literally.
Yeah.
Literally. That's what I think anyway. But yeah.
And that was for
Halloween, the Halloween movie I wish we did. Yeah. But if you guys also wish we covered another Halloween movie, let us know. You can
we might record it next year.
Maybe. I mean, we will just have a special middle of the year. Of Halloween episodes. I don't know. But are you ready to get into Sober Thoughts?
I am so ready.
Are you ready to get into your first costume?
I'm ready to get my first costume.
Okay. Let's do it. Do you want to describe what you're wearing, Christian?
Okay. So I am wearing normal clothes, but covered by a giant, like, green faux fur-like coat thing or whatever. Like, just a giant, like, dark green mop.
Mm-hmm.
And I am sitting in a garbage can.
You're Oscar the Grouch.
I'm Oscar the Grouch.
Okay. I am wearing, like, a really tight, like, turtleneck sweater and, like, basically, like, superhero attire. Uh-huh. My hair is in a bob. I have a little crystal in the middle of my forehead. And I'm part of a team.
Oh, are you Raven?
Raven from Teen Titans.
Is that purple?
It's supposed to
the
be.
The light in here just makes it look like a black dot. Or red. It's supposed to be red, ain't it?
I think so. I don't know. I feel like it couldn't, like, get it.
I see it now.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. I have a little dot. A little dot on my forehead.
That's cool.
Thank you.
I like this.
Thank you. You did real good. I like that.
Thank you. Can I get out of the trash can now?
Yes, you can get out of the trash can.
Thank you. Ugh. Disgusting.
Oh my goodness. So the first movie we covered this month was Bram Stoker's Dracula. And Christian, did you enjoy that movie?
It was good.
I enjoyed covering it too. I think it was a really fun episode.
This was the first time I've seen it all the way through, mm-hmm. which was interesting because mm-hmm. this was like Sahara's movie growing up.
Mm-hmm.
Disgusting.
Oh my goodness. So our first fact about the film is Prince Vlad's scream after he drives his sword into the cross is not the voice of Gary Oldman. Lux Interior, lead singer of punk band The Cramps, recorded the scream and it was dubbed in.
Ooh. And at the first cast meeting called by producer and director Francis Ford Coppola, he got all of the principal actors and actresses to read the entire Bram Stoker novel out loud to get a feel for the story. According to Sir Anthony Hopkins, it took 2 days to complete.
I am reading it right now, and I'm at the part where they just killed Lucy off. So I can imagine how much it probably, like, because it's a pretty thick book.
Yeah, it's a big book.
Yeah.
Not Lucy, but Winona, who is played by Winona Ryder, recalls her previous life as Elisabetta. She says she remembered a land beyond a great forest. The land beyond the forest is a literal translation of, or not translation, but the literal meaning of like Transylvania.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Layers.
Layers.
So I know I talked about the blue flame in the recording, but I wanted to like bring it back to that.
Yeah, the blue flame.
Yeah. So the blue flames seen on the road at the castle are a detailed mansion mentioned in the book. In the novel, it's explained that on the night, every year, blue flames are seen over areas containing hidden treasures. In the scene from the novel, Harker's coach driver stops several times to place rocks over them as markers in order to find them in the daytime and possibly dig up for treasure.
Ooh, didn't know that. Mm-hmm. And so Francis Ford Coppola says that Bram Stoker's name was included in the title because he has a tradition of putting the author's names in the titles of his movies, such as Mario Puzo's The Godfather and John Grisham's The Rainmaker. Others have claimed, however, that Stoker's name was included in the title to avoid legal action from Universal Studios, who claimed to own the rights to the simple title of Dracula from 1931. Mm. Even though I thought Dracula was in the public domain. Maybe. Like, anyone can make a Dracula story.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
I guess with Nosferatu.
Yeah.
Which we should go see. I'm excited. Are you excited for that movie?
Yeah, I'm excited.
I'm so excited. We got fucking Lily Rose Depp in it.
Yana Tanaka.
Oh my goodness. So Francis Ford Coppola and the special effects team consulted with professional magicians to achieve the effects of Dracula's brides rising up from the bed.
Ooh.
So was that part spooky in the film?
Kind of. And at the beginning of the movie, Jonathan Harker, played by Keanu Reeves, asks why Count Dracula, who's Gary Oldman, why he purchased those homes in London in like such specific locations. And the question is never answered in the movie, but the explanation given in the book is that 50 boxes of Transylvanian earth or soil were distributed throughout Dracula's houses to locations surrounding London so that he could have multiple places to rest and regain his strength at daybreak because, you know, Dracula's can only sleep on their home soil.
Mm-hmm.
And so during which Dracula must rest either in a coffin or in the earth of his homeland.
That's crazy. You like asked about like why he's like purchasing so many things. So I thought I'd add that little tidbit.
Well, I knew why, because he wanted to be able to move around the city at night. I just thought the locations themselves had meaning. Mm. I didn't think he just wanted so many locations. So we had options.
Trying to find a safe zone, safe spot.
Yeah. Respawn. And at one point during filming, a double was used to portray the wolf beast version of Dracula mm-hmm. when Gary Oldman actually ended up suffering an allergic reaction to the makeup they were putting on him.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. That happens a lot in movies. Like, I was reading about, like, The Wizard of Oz.
Uh-huh.
Dude, the woman who played the Wicked Witch of the West or whatever, mm-hmm. Her green makeup or whatever was, like, giving her chemical burns.
Jeez.
Like, every time she put it on. And so she had to, like...
wipe it all off, put like this ointment on her for her skin every day, and then like come back to work and put the toxic makeup back
on.
Oh
my God.
And like the snow was that made them fall asleep was like asbestos. Yeah. Like the whole movie is just like,
it's fucked up.
Yeah.
But remember how we talked about Gary Oldman and Winona Ryder having a falling out and not knowing what it was because she called it like all childish, like teenage stuff.
Yeah.
Well, according to an extra on this movie, during the scene where Dracula first arrives in London and he and Mina meet on the street, there is some difficulty getting Winona Ryder to have an appropriate response to seeing him for the first time. Gary Oldman grabbed a zucchini off of the vegetable cart that was part of the street scene and held it behind his back. When Mina was across the street, he then flashed her in front of his groin and made some suggestive gestures.
He flashed like the cucumber.
Not his actual member. Yeah. And when she turned to look at him, which elicited the reaction Francis Ford Coppola was after, Ryder was allegedly not amused and fell out with Oldman for a remainder of the filming.
Mm.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. So, Sadie Frost, who plays Lucy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Was nervous about shooting the ravishment scene. If you know, you know. Mm-hmm. So Francis Ford Coppola asked Gary Oldman to talk to her. And so according to Frost, Oldman started whispering to her to like get her in the mood. And nobody knows exactly what she said, what was said, but Coppola said that he was amused when he found out.
I would just like to say that the end result was very, we say rough.
Worth.
So producer and director Francis Ford Coppola and Richard E. Grant, who played Dr. Seward, and Cary Elwes and Billy Campbell embarked on a series of adventures, including horseback riding, hot air ballooning, to build the camaraderie between the three.
And so Cary Elwes plays Lord Arthur Holmwood, who is Mina's fiancé, right?
No, that's Lucy's fiancé.
Or Lucy, yeah, sorry, Mina is... Jonathan Harker, sorry, mm-hmm. Lucy, and Billy Campbell's Quincy, the
mm-hmm.
American.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just for reference, y'all, in case you didn't listen to our episode, which you can on podcast, Apple Podcasts.
On Podcast Apple.
Yeah, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. And so Sir Anthony Hopkins, excuse me.
We can't talk today.
I know. So Sir Anthony Hopkins, who plays Cesare, the priest, tells Dracula that Elisabetta's soul is damned because she killed herself. He provides the voiceover sequence during the narrative for the captain of the Demeter, which is the ship mm-hmm. that Dracula arrives to London on.
Oh my goodness.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my goodness.
Also, costume designer Aiko Ishioka, who is Japanese, incorporated a lot of the costumes from like kabuki, like theater light stuff, if mm-hmm. you know what I mean. And so like Gary Oldman's wig maker, if you remember, like early in the movie, he has this huge wig that like gives his hair like a whole bunch of volume or whatever.
Yeah, it looks like a heart.
Yeah, his wig maker and hair designer Stuart Ardingstall had actually studied like kabuki and geisha hairstyles, and he also like helped to incorporate them into their unique like designs, you know, mm-hmm. and the reason why they look like that. And like each wig was built, and it took like hours of like work to like thread each of the hairs to the base, and which is usually something that they do for like operas or mm-hmm. whatever, for like those big scale productions mm-hmm. or whatever. But they did that for this movie, and it took them like hours for each one.
That's amazing. You did that beautifully. You know, Steve Buscemi was the first choice to play Renfield, but he turned it down. Can you imagine seeing Steve Buscemi for the fourth time on this podcast?
That'd be great. He's an honorary member.
Is he a Scream King technically?
And I don't think so.
We're trying to be in Dracula and then Monster House and then putting up with Spy Kids, the Island of Monsters.
Yeah, that's not really a scary movie though.
Oh, that counts as like spooky towards kids.
Whatever. Go ahead.
So during the impaling scene with during the impaling scene where figures can be seen on skewer pikes in the background, there is one shadow that is clearly the outline of Nosferatu. His long fingers and misshaped head make him stand out. This is clearly an homage to the first Dracula film adaptation ever made.
Ooh. And so Coppola actually screened this movie for his close friend George Lucas, oh. who, as you probably know, directed Star Wars and Indiana Jones, and who suggested that in adherence to the vampire mythology, Mina should decapitate Dracula as the ultimate release for him to reach heaven. And Coppola agreed, and they shot it 3 weeks before the movie released.
That's insane. That's so crazy.
They're like, quick, come back. We need to reshoot.
Literally. Can you believe that George Lucas came up with that, though?
That's funny. I love George Lucas. He knows ball, I fear. Like, he knows movie ball.
So in the final scene of the film, when Mina is looking down on the dying Count Dracula in the chapel, after saying that God has forsaken him, he utters the words, "It is finished." This is a biblical reference to the same final words of Jesus in the Gospel of John. Despite the sorrowful way in which the Count says them, they actually foreshadow his salvation just a few seconds later. When Mina kisses him, the light that shines on him immediately afterwards symbolizes that he is reconciled with God and has escaped his curse of living forever as a vampire. Can die a peaceful death.
The end.
The end.
That's all we have for Bram Stoker's Dracula. But next up, mm-hmm. we have Halloween Town.
Oh my goodness.
But before we get there, we have to dress in our next costumes.
Oh, you want us to start the next costumes? We're only supposed to do three costumes. So I thought we'd get over this movie.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, do you want to
okay,
have any last thoughts about Dracula, though?
I think that the movie was pretty good. I still stick by my rating. Mm-hmm. I think I gave it like an 8 out of 10 or 9 out of 10 or something. Like, mm-hmm. it's really good. Mm-hmm. I like it.
I definitely highly recommend. If you haven't seen this version of Dracula, I definitely highly recommend. It is the closest to the book that is out there.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of follows it almost verbatim, but I think Coppola definitely like puts a lot of like, not only needed, but like very like directorial intervention on how to tell this story.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's complete. Like, it's magical. Like, you're kind of reminded, like, why this monster is scary.
Yeah.
I feel like vampires have, like, gotten less scary. Like, they're very sexy and alluring and very, like, not as scary as they
Thanks
used
a lot,
to be.
Edward.
Yeah, but, like, this Dracula, like, you are, like, terrified of this, like, creature,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense. And I think that's what makes it so good.
Mm-hmm.
But the next film that we covered this October is the classic Disney Channel original movie
Halloween Town. Bum, bum, bum.
Halloween Town was filmed in the small town of Scappos in St. Helens, Oregon. The pumpkin in the Halloween Town Square was gifted to the city of St. Helens and is displayed every Halloween in the town square during the Spirit of Halloween celebration. So if you want to go see the Halloween Town pumpkin, you can definitely go see it today.
Go to St. Helens, Oregon. And so our next thing about this movie, so Judith Hogue, who plays the mom, mm-hmm. right, she actually had to miss the premiere of another movie she was in, Armageddon, to make this one.
Isn't that crazy?
I wouldn't have missed it, for what it's worth. Armageddon was way better.
Oh my god, I've never seen Armageddon.
And also, Marnie, Dylan, and Sophie, the kids in the movie, mm-hmm. Were named after the writer, Paul Perrin. Okay, hold on. Marnie, Dylan, and Sophie were actually named after writer Paul Barenboim's children.
Mm-hmm.
Fun fact.
Which, like, I need to know how do you go from Marnie to Dylan?
Dylan!
Is Marnie short for something?
Marnabelle.
Oh.
I'm kidding, I have no idea. Let's look it up. You get the next fact while I look it up.
Okay. Should I say the next time?
Yeah.
Okay. So Kimberly J. Brown, who plays Marnie, confirmed a different ending to the movie. Instead of Marnie putting the talisman in the jack-o'-lantern to save Aggie and Gwen, she had to walk into a forest, and every time she walked deeper into it, her face would slowly age. Kimberly said she was in the process of making a mold of her face, done for the facial prosthetic. The writers changed the ending, and Kimberly got to keep the mold of her face, which she still has to this day.
And I looked it up.
Mm-hmm.
Marnie is a diminutive of names starting with Mar, usually Margaret or Marjorie.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably her name.
Okay. I was like, that has to be short for something. Are you ready to get into our next costume?
I am so ready.
Okay. I will say this is probably the best costume you've done.
Do you even know what I am?
I think so.
Okay.
Do you want to describe it?
You go first. Hold on.
Okay.
Hold on. Go ahead.
Okay. So I have a ponytail. And I have two strands out of my hair to have the bangs. I have a little hoodie on, a shirt, visibly pregnant with skirt and jeans.
Are you Juno?
I'm Juno.
Hell yeah. So I have on some red pants, like red, like dark burgundy pants.
Mm-hmm.
I have a yellow shirt. I have like a green like cape thing going on. And I have a leather handbag, like a crossbody bag thing, okay. Kind of. It's a handbag, but it's mm-hmm. not like the Merce or man purse thing, whatever. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's a bag.
I feel like it could be two things.
All right.
it's you, Charlie. You're either a hobbit or you're
fucking... I was gonna be like, it's a... You're gonna ask, oh, what are you? And I was gonna be like, oh, it's you, Charlie. A Mip from Smiling Friends. A Mip.
That was pretty good. We should take a picture of that. And just be like,
it's you, Charlie. Okay,
before we cover our next movie, what did you think of like Halloween Town?
Halloween Town was pretty cool. I liked it. It was a good movie.
I mean, it's a classic for a reason.
Like, here's what mixed me up. So the movie takes place Halloween night. So in our world, it's dark, but they go to Halloween Town and it's like the middle of the day. And I'm like,
because she already explained that time works different there.
Yeah, I know time works differently there. It just shocked me. It's like, oh, I expected it to be dark here too.
It's just a scab. Why are you picking at my scab? Because you pick at your scab doesn't mean I should pick at mine.
It's fun to pick at scabs.
No, it's your body healing. Stop, it's your body healing.
I'm going to pick.
And you're being, you're pissing your body off.
My body's like, stop it.
No, literally, they're trying to patch you up and everything.
Yeah, I sorry. Start over, go ahead.
I can't remember what I'm going to say.
It's a classic Halloween movie.
It is a classic Halloween movie.
Well, anyway. So moving on from that, our next episode that we did was over 3 episodes from The Twilight Zone.
Woo! Woo!
And so our first episode that we did was It's a Good Life. Mm-hmm. So Bill Mummy and Cloris Leachman reprised their roles in It's Still a Good Life from 2003, which was like the new Twilight Zone, mm-hmm. which is the only sequel in the history of The Twilight Zone. And in it, Mummy's real-life daughter, Liliana Mummy, played Anthony's daughter. Anthony was the main character in...
He was the kid.
He was the kid who had mm-hmm. like the godlike power. She plays Anthony's daughter, Audrey, who is even more powerful than he is. The episode also holds a record for the longest interval between a television episode and its sequel at 41 years, 3 months.
Because remember how I said, oh, I wish there was more to this story? And finding out that there is so amazing. And I can't wait to, like honestly watch that. I'm like, oh, I need to know.
Do you want to watch?
No key.
Well, fine. We will.
This episode has the longest opening narration of any Twilight Zone episode.
Which I noticed when we were watching. I was like, wow, this opening narration is taking a while. And I'm like, well, it is. But in this episode, the word good is repeated 46 times.
Right.
And on the television set at the very end, the dinosaur battle that's going on is from Lost Continent, the movie in 1951.
Wow.
Ooh.
Nightmare at 20,000. Oh, wait, hold on. So what are our final thoughts on It's a Good Life?
I liked it. I think it's a different kind of like scary.
It's terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely like, and I really wish that like maybe, and then I get it, it's like the 1950s, but I feel like if this were like to be remade today, I feel like it'd be like, so like the thought of like a child being like that dark, but also them not knowing like they are like being evil, because he doesn't know. Mm-hmm. He just wants to have fun. He just wants to play. And you know when like a kid has like those temper tantrums when they don't get their way? Because they don't know. They don't regulate. Like it's honestly wholeheartedly the parents' fault mm-hmm. for making him like that. You know? I don't know. But yeah, but that's my opinion on that show.
Ooh.
Or episode.
Episode.
I honestly really liked it. And I would say The Mask is good, but It's a Good Life is definitely like stepping on its neck a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, so you think It's a Good Life is better than The Mask?
I say it's up there.
Right.
I feel like I change my mind every day on what I think is good, you know?
That's fair. So the next episode we did was Nightmare at 20,000 Feet. So writer Richard Matheson said that he was mostly pleased with the Twilight Zone's version of his short story, and he was the one who wrote it for the episode and the story, except for the gremlin, which he conceived as a dark and creepy, nearly invisible humanoid figure. But this thing, quoting Matheson, said, looked more like a panda bear, which is fair.
Yeah.
Like, it looks more like a weird bear, like a koala or something.
Mm-hmm. So William Shatner played an elaborate prank on set when he conspired with a friend who was visiting the film, actor Ed Burns, to trick director Richard Donner into thinking Shatner died. During a filming break and when Donner was off set, Shatner and Barnes staged a fake fight on set, which was suspended some 30 feet above the studio floor. When Donner ran back in the studio to see what was happening, the two men chased each other around the back of the airplane's set and wound up on top of the plane wing. Donner saw a body fall off the wing and Barnes yelling in terror as it impacted the concrete floor. Donner said when he ran to the fallen, motionless figure, thinking it was a dead or grievously injured William Shatner, he was greeted with laughter the moment he realized it was just an articulated human dummy. The two men had...
Keep... Yeah, finish.
The two men had found in another part of the studio had thrown off the wing. Donner later joked, honestly, my first reaction was, don't tell me I have to shoot the whole show over again.
That's awful.
I know.
So, one of the six Tease episodes directed by Richard Donner.
Twilight Zone.
Oh, okay, sorry. Well, I thought that was like Tease episode, which is something else. All right. So, this episode is actually one of the six episodes directed by Richard Donner. According to Donner, due to the scheduling constraints and technical issues with the simulated weather, airplane engines, and technical issues with just the special effects, it was also one of the show's most difficult shoots. Filming was crammed in a 3 days of work, from 3 days into work of work into only 2 days, and it demanded extraordinarily long hours from the cast and crew.
I will say, like, everyone kind of looked kind of over
tired.
Yeah, tired. Yeah, but I think with looking like so tired, especially with like William Shatner's character, it works. Mm-hmm. You really get that like claustrophobic feeling in the airplane, the feeling of like being gaslighted on everybody. Nobody believes you. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? And I think it works in this episode.
I agree. And also, so this episode kind of has like a bit of a real life impact now. Airplanes, you know, obviously they have seats on the inside. Every once in a while, there's a seat that has like a perfect view of the wings, mm-hmm. you know, and you can see all the way up and down the wing. And that seat is like jokingly called the Shatner seat, as in it's the seat where William Shatner sat during this episode. Mm-hmm. Ta-da!
Have you guys ever sat in the Shatner seat? Let us know.
I have. It's fun. So what did you think of this episode?
It's good. It definitely gives me the whole like, when I think of Twilight Zone, like I think of like this episode, mm-hmm. you know? And I feel like I said, like you chose really good with these episodes. Like, I think they really like humble, like the creep factor, like the creepiness of it.
Mm-hmm.
Of like, no, I don't know, it's just something good. So scary on like an air. You have nowhere to go on an airplane.
Yeah.
You know,
it's like snakes on a plane.
Yes. Like there's no escape. So like seeing something that's not supposed to be on there, like it definitely like gives the fear of like flying.
And now would you believe me if I told you that there was a gremlin on the way?
Would I believe you?
Yeah.
I would think you're fucking with me, but I'm
like, Sahara, there is a gremlin on the wing.
I feel like you'd have that whole, like, listen, I know this is going to sound crazy.
Oh my God.
I feel like you'd prep talk me before, like, giving me the news that there's something on the wing.
I feel like the time it would take for me to, like, try and convince you, it would have ripped the wing off. Oh my God. Told you. All right. And then our final episode we covered was The Masks. Mm-hmm. That's plural. I think we were saying
I only had one. I can only find one fact about this one.
Oh, what was that?
Just one. It was that Robert Keith's final acting role before his death on December 22nd, 1966, at the age of 76.
And that was, he played the main character mm-hmm. in this. One thing that I really liked, though, mm-hmm. About this episode was that, like, the masks themselves, or whatever, like, physically, like, the masks.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, there is another fact, but this was also directed by Ida Lupino. And I believe this was like the first Twilight Zone episode directed by a woman, I think.
Yeah.
But she, if you remember, was on a similar episode called The 16 Millimeter Shrine. And in that episode, she is this old actress in Hollywood, and she misses her younger years, her glory days. And she wishes she lived in the big screen where her character did. And by the end of the movie, she gets her wish or whatever.
Do you want to go into our last question before we do the last one?
Of course.
All right.
Ready?
Yes.
Okay, go.
Christian has his glasses floating. Christian, are you the Invisible Man?
I am
from Hotel Transylvania.
I am the Invisible Man.
From
Hotel? Not from Hotel Transylvania, just from the Invisible Man.
Do you have the glasses? You're that one girl's Hear Me Out. Have you seen that?
Oh my God.
Or she just has the glasses. I just have a yellow shirt, but I'm a specific character.
You're Charlie Brown.
No.
Oh, I saw the jeans and I thought.
Who else was a yellow shirt and jeans?
Are you Morty?
Yeah, the specific Morty.
Are you evil Morty?
No. Whoa. I'm Morty when he gets stuck in that game and then she becomes like the, where Summer has to do like a Die Hard.
Oh my God.
I'm not Morty.
That's not even Morty. That's,
Yeah, but he'd like, it's Morty's like brain, like in different people. So all the characters are more technically Morty.
Oh my God.
I'm not Morty.
Oh my God. You're awful.
I'm Morty. We're in a video game. And this guy is our grandpa.
Oh
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I get it. You're all my Morty.
Yeah.
And those... I'm not going to lie. I think I ate you up this year.
You did. I was so surprised. You did real good, especially with Myth.
give me a kiss. Mm. My glass is clean. I'm glad you think so.
I thought that was really clever, Christian.
I'm going to take my glasses back.
You did so good.
Thank you.
You did way better than me. I got to step up my game next year. I got to make them harder. I was like, I feel like I make them too complicated, so I'm going to try and make them easier.
Okay. I like the complicated ones. I love the chase. We're trying to figure out what you are.
So the last movie we covered is Halloween H2O 20 years
also later. Why do you keep saying H2O?
Is that not how it's pronounced?
It's H20. You keep saying H2O and I keep
thinking, and people go calling it H20. No, it's H2O. I'm saying H2O.
I keep thinking about like the mermaid movie.
No, it's not a movie, it's a show.
Whatever. Same difference.
H20. Gross.
It's H20. That is what it is.
No, I hate that. It's H2O.
You literally wrote a zero.
I know.
It's H20.
I know. But it's funnier saying H2O.
It's okay. You're funny.
Anyway, remember how I said in this episode that they casted LL Cool J to like reach out black audiences more? Well, it turns out LL Cool J had always been a fan of the Halloween Mother. LL Cool J has always been a fan of Halloween movies. His mother took him to see the original when he was just 9 years old. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine taking the kid to see a scary movie at 9 years old?
Yeah. I'm going to take our kid to go see whatever.
Oh yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
Oh Lord.
It'll be great. You'll love it.
Jamie Lee Curtis recalls Josh Harnett being someone who wanted to be an actor but didn't want the trappings of stardom. He would wear a knit beanie on set at all times and removed it to film a scene and then immediately returned it to his head as a way of retaining his personality. Curtis said, I respected him for it. It was annoying, but I respected him for
it. Gotta respect it. So on the television in the girls' dorm, there's a clip from Scream 2 that's playing, which is a callback to numerous like original Halloween references and clips in Scream. However, according to producer Mustafa Akkad, when the scene was filmed, the girls were actually watching So I Married an Axe Murderer.
Which we've seen!
And this would have made for an entirely different joke, a movie featuring the killer Michael Myers had its character watching the star of So I Married an Axe Murderer, Mike Myers.
Mm-hmm.
Which is funny. But the clip was actually changed to Scream 2 in post-production, probably because the real Mike Myers refused to make a cameo in the film. And in honor of Kevin Williamson, who attributed to H20's script after having just written Scream 2.
That's amazing. When Jamie Lee Curtis says, go down to the street to the Beckers, this was supposed to refer to the line of Halloween 1978, to go down to the street to the McKenzie's house. The name was changed to Becker, which was the last name of Drew Barrymore's character in Scream.
Another Scream reference.
Mm-hmm.
Is this a Scream reference? So, the line, everyone is entitled to one good scare, is said by Norma to Laurie. Sheriff Brackett, who played by Charles Cyphers, originally said that line in the first Halloween, 1978.
Wow.
And in Halloween, 25 Years of Terror, the documentary, John Carl Brickler and Greg Nicotero of KNBFX revealed four completely different masks are used throughout the movie. The first one, from John Carl Brickler, resembled the one from Halloween 6. However, the producers were not satisfied, so they called in Greg Nicotero and had him work on a new mask, and filming resumed using that mask. That mask ended up being replaced by another one, and at one point, a CGI mask is also used.
So remember in that scene where you thought he looked a little, like, funky looking?
Yeah.
Now that's that mask.
Yeah.
It just looks like he's doing the...
I'm like, why don't they just use the same mask?
I don't know.
You know what I mean?
Mm.
Is it that hard to just make the same mask as in the first movie?
Don't drop the freaking knife, yelled Curtis on the commentary as Laurie drops the knife. Ah, I could punch her in the nose right now, she adds. That they made her drop the knife in the first movie and isn't sure why she didn't learn from her mistakes. Because as if you've listened to our previous recording, Christian is actually complaining about that. And Jamie Lee Curtis would agree with you.
They like everyone drops their weapons. And I'm like, dude, I'm like holding on to that. Yeah. Also, was it... It made me so mad when they shot LL Cool J's.
I know. I was like, ugh. I'm so glad he lived, though. That made me so happy.
He's like, I just got grazed. Anyway, but So on the day of Adam Hanbird's audition, who does he play again?
He plays Charlie.
Charlie. He had a really bad headache and he thought he botched the read because he was so out of it. However, his sickness somehow worked in his favor, and director Steve Miner and the producers read his performance as detached and creepy. He landed the role of Charlie, and a few weeks afterwards, Steve Miner called him to say, "We're doing another pass on the script. Now Charlie's going to be the horny best friend." To which Adam said, "I always wanted to play a horny best friend." And Jamie Lee Curtis's nickname for Chris Durand, who plays Michael Myers in the movie, during filming was Shapey.
Is it because they kept changing his mask? Do you think that's why? Maybe.
Shapeshifter?
Oh my goodness. One of the biggest sources of tension between the filmmakers was the issue of the film's ending. Early drafts of the script by Robert Sapia had Laurie stabbing Michael Myers through the heart with a javelin while he was in the pool or pinned between two pieces of retractable gym floor, while Kevin Williamson's treatment had the shape being cut in half by a helicopter rotor. However, the producer wanted the shape to live at the end so that he could produce more Halloween movies. And he even put a clause in his contract that Michael Myers could not be killed off. Contrary to that, Bob Weinstein at Dimension Films, as well as actress Jamie Lee Curtis, wanted the shape to die. Curtis even threatened to pull out several weeks before filming unless her demands were met. Weinstein then instructed the producer to write two endings and send the ending with the shape surviving.
Send that ending to Akkad.
While they would actually shoot the ending where he died. Sapia's refused, much to Weinstein's annoyance, and according to Sapia, Kevin Williamson finally concocted the film's ending where the shape is killed with the twist revealed in Halloween Resurrection.
Bum, bum, bum.
That the shape had previously switched clothes with paramedics whom he had rendered mute. The solution managed to appease all parties, and according to screenwriter Matt Greenberg, it was Weinstein who finally suggested that Laurie Strode decapitated the shape with an axe.
Bum, bum, bum.
I love that they call Michael Myers the shape. I wonder why. I wonder if that's like because of the first film.
Is it?
Maybe. I don't know.
Perhaps.
I don't know. Let us know. Let us know.
Let us know.
At Puff Puff Pass Podcast. Well, that's who we are.
That's who we are.
And you can find us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Anywhere you get your podcast. We are the couple that is smoking in the background. Thank you so much for joining us for this year's Spooktober. It was so fun to record, and I think we picked some really good movies. But if you completely disagree with us, that is fine. You have every right to your opinion. But email us your words at puffpuffpodcast@23gmail.com.
You can argue with us on all of our social media. On Twitter, we are at Puff Pass Podcast, and on Letterboxd, we are Puff Puff Pass 23. On Instagram, we are Puff_Pass_Podcast. And on TikTok, we are Puff That Podcast 23.
Yeah. So if you're in the argumentative mood for these Halloween movies, like me calling it H2O instead of H20, like Christian suggests,
happy sparking.
But yeah, we hope you guys have awesome costumes planned for Halloween. Whoop. We hope you have safe and awesome and go get some candy. You are never too old to go out trick-or-treating. Go find fun things to do. Go party. You know, have fun. Have fun.
Have lots of fun.
Things are so tenuous right now. And like, you know, you deserve to have some fun time.
Happy Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
Goodbye.